Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. We kick off this final day of the month of September with yet another weird law from around the world. This one, again, comes to you courtesy of the United States. In the state of Iowa, particularly in the city of Indianola in Iowa, it is illegal within city limits to operate an ice cream truck. The poor kids that all want an ice cream can't have ice cream trucks driving around, partly because of the risk of children running into the streets, and that poses a security risk. And so since 1967, the city has outlawed, within city limits, obviously, the use of ice cream trucks in that particular state. Tune into the SAFM Market Update with Money Web. And on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at the results out of Eskom. We're going to speak to the Chief Financial Officer of Eskom, get a sense of the performance of that entity over the last financial year. Then we've got a conversation with Nedbank Private Wealth around the gold market and what seems to be all of the rage around that. Then we're going to speak to the Department of Transport around the gazetted notice that went out earlier this week that clarified what South Africans can do in the event that they have an expired driver's license but are still waiting for their driver's license to be renewed. Then we've got a conversation with the team at Allan Gray looking at safe havens in the age of fiscal dominance. We're going to try and make sense of what that means and where we go to from here from an investment point of view. And then because it's Tuesday, we've got a property feature this Tuesday. We're going to be taking a look at potentially one of the largest auctions that will take place in 2025 in South Africa. It will take place in the middle of next month. And just to give you an idea of the numbers we're talking, we're north of 250 million rand for a particular wine estate here. So stick around for that, and that's coming up later in the show.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As always, we start off with a sense of how the markets have been moving throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by wealth manager at PSG Wealth Route 21, Skalk Lowe, to take a look at market movements and see what we make of them. Skalk, lovely having you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. For once, I can speak to you with the rand below 17 rand 30.
Tough crowd. And you're not mentioning the fact that as we sit here, we just finished up the third quarter. There we go. Third quarter of 2025, done and dusted for the JSE. We've got one quarter left. And I mean, I know you know more or less, but you want to take a guess what's the year-to-date performances for the JSE as we sit here?
So I know our resources counters, or the resources sector, is up more than 150%. I know that we have touched all-time highs on the all share. I know that we are in all-time high territory on the on the top 40, and we're above 100,000 points in the case of both of those. I'm going to take a gander and say we're up probably close to 35 to 40% on the market.
I'll take that any day, because if we went into this year, it's just unbelievable how we're sitting here. Jimmy, you and I, we chatted about this as we ended the year, and it was a good 2024, went into 2025, and it was sort of, what do we expect? You know, if we can just sort of just keep it in positive territory. People were sort of a little bit worried about Trump, you know, coming into office. And here we're sitting, you know, 31.5% on the JSE year to date. That's the 1st of January up to now. You mentioned it. It's definitely the resources with a star. I mean, listen to this. Sibanye Stillwater, 230%. Durban Roodepoort Deep, 198%. Gold Fields, 200%. Anglo Gold, 194%. You could start hearing the trend here. So pretty much, you know, if you had no gold, you had no love in your portfolio, without a doubt. I mean, then you throw in the Northams, which is the Palladium Platinum, 188%. Impala Platinum, 152%. Volterra, 142%. Man, what a year. And it was sort of disappointing in a sense, you know, looking at this data. And then the next moment, we look at our balance of trade data that came out today. And you know, people say, come on, Skalk, it's still the seventh. It's the seventh month in a row where we've been running a surplus. You started this conversation saying, Skalk, I mean, look at the rand, you know, 17.20 odd. I mean, this is a great win. And yes, I think a lot of people out there would say, well, it's been supported by a weaker dollar. Come on, we need to be realistic here as well. But I mean, 7 months in a row where we've been running a trade surplus, that's always going to be, you know, a positive signal, you know, for something like the rand. But I was disappointed. I was disappointed when I saw the data that came out this morning or during the course of the day. We're still in a surplus, but I mean the surplus seriously narrowed. We're talking about it shrunk to four billion, you know, from 20 billion in July, and the biggest culprit was our exports. Our exports really disappointed, and there, when you look at the biggest disappointment was our precious metals. So, I mean, this is where, you know, if you read these type of data, you know, the Sibanyas, Durban Ridderport Deep, Goldfields, your Anglo-Golds, Northerns, these type of year-to-date returns, you want to see us exporting 27 hours a day. That's just bottom line.
Skalk, we are dangerously close to the midnight deadline in the United States relating to that government shutdown. Now, when we looked at this yesterday, I had a look at this with Gary Boyson on Markets yesterday, and we kind of spoke about the fact that it might not have any real significant implications on the markets in the short term because we have had government shutdowns in the past. I think the last one in President Trump's initial first term was just north of 34 days or so, and markets kind of reacted calmly towards that. Are we seeing a calm reaction to markets at this stage, understanding that, of course, U.S. markets do still have a big influence on the rest of the globe?
Now, this is not good. I mean, you want transparency. And I think the one or two things are going to happen. I mean, we'll wait until pretty much deadline. 12 o'clock tonight, top of deadline, where we'll have some guidance. But I mean, this is one of the major reasons why we're seeing the dollar being under pressure. This is one of the major reasons why we're seeing the gold price just reaching new all-time highs and new all-time highs. You typically want to see, you know, in clarity. This is not the first time it's happened under a Trump watch. This is now the second time. And I read somewhere, Jimmy, it's something like only the fifth time in 35 years or something like that. So this is significant, and markets are telling us that. I mean, you can see today, NASDAQ not really positive, Dow not positive. You can see there's a nervousness in the market. Yes, we're coming off one of the best Septembers in years. So there might just be a bit of a breather in the market, but I don't think this is something that's just going to go away. They need to address it. They need to address it ASAP, because that will bring the sort of just less nervousness in the markets for now.
Skalk, let's take a look at some of the optimistic outlooks. Markets at the moment, as you said, have been running for the longest time. They've been running hot. South African markets have been benefiting from that, largely off the commodities markets that we've been seeing. Is it still going to run? We are going into the final quarter. You said September was great, but you and I both know September is usually probably one of the worst months in the year. So for September to be this great, what does that mean for the rest of the quarter or for the rest of the year? Understanding that for South Africa, this quarter usually is one of our best performing quarters.
You're not seeing me. I wish you had a video of me sitting now polishing my crystal ball. Polishing and polishing and polishing. But I mean, Jimmy, so two things. You know, we've had a good year. I mean, we haven't been celebrating this good year, and not just a good year. I mean, over the past 5 years, we've even been outperforming in dollar terms. When I say we, but talking about the JSE, has been outperforming the S&P 500, which also had a phenomenal 5 years. So firstly, let's high five each other and just celebrate, you know, this is a great, great recovery and a great return that the local market's been giving us. But I mean, to your question, I can't tell you where things are going to go, but what I can tell you is, are we currently expensive after this movement? Let's call it close to 32% run in 2020. 2025? And the answer is no. We're not even, let's call it at our mid-case. When we look at the past 15 years, forward P on the JSE, we're not even at that, let's call it median price yet. And why is this important? That the previous time I've seen something like this, and when I say something like this, I'm talking about a commodity boom, gold running, platinum running, palladium running. I mean, remember, we're the largest platinum producer, second largest palladium, largest rhodium, the eighth largest gold producer in the world. When we see these commodities, last time we've seen this type of run in these commodities was the mid-2000s. And there we've seen a longish, you know, the rand continue to strengthen. We saw our trade balance. We saw our unemployment come down. So don't be surprised if we see a, let's call it a continuation on South Africa doing well in markets. I wouldn't be selling or calling tops on the JSE yet. I'm a little bit nervous about the US market, but I mean, definitely South Africa is not expensive yet.
Long may the euphoria live. We'll see how much longer the markets continue to rally. For now, those that are in the markets, that have been in the markets, are continuing to profit from that. Those that are not yet in the markets might want to consider getting involved, but speak to a financial advisor. Don't say Skulk Low or Jimmy Moyaha gave you that as financial advice, because that's not what we do. We'll leave this conversation on that note. Thanks so much, Skulk, for those insights. Always lovely having you on the show. Wealth manager at PSG Wealth Route 21, Skulk Low, joining us to take a look at market movements as well as market momentum three quarters of the way into the year.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Gold's ancient role as a reserve of last resort is finding new relevance in a world where geopolitical risk is no longer a tail event, but a structural feature. The recent surge in the gold price highlights the enduring uncertainty in global markets. Tune into the SAFM Market Update this evening at 6:45 as Horatia Naidu McCarthy, Institutional Client Manager at Allen Gray, explores the forces shaping investor behavior in the current environment. Brought to you by Allen Gray. More than 50 years of long-term investing. Allen Gray is an authorized FSP.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The state-owned entity known as Eskom released their financial results for the financial year ended 31 March 2025. And as always with these sets of results, we have the privilege of speaking to the Chief Financial Officer at Eskom. That is Caleb Kasim. He joins me on the line now to take a look at the performance of the state-owned entity and see what we make of it. Uncle Caleb, always lovely having you on the show. Always lovely catching up around the numbers. Let's perhaps start with the significant number in the profit number. The first time Eskom has returned to profit since 2017, a profit just shy of 24 billion rand before taxes. But a profit you and I spoke about in December of last year, saying that we are expecting to see this profit. It's good to see that we managed to live up to those expectations. How do you reflect on the year that was?
Good evening, Jimmy, to you and your audience. Yeah, I think it has been a tremendous year for Eskom. I think first, on the back of the tremendous generation performance, with only 13 days of load shedding. And as I've always said to the listeners, that the finances are other side of the coin of operations. That's come through in the performance financially. So it's tremendous to be in the black after 8 long years.
Caleb, let's take a look at some other positives that came out of the numbers as well. Open cycle gas turbines, in simple English for South Africans out there, the amount of diesel that's been burned through from an Eskom perspective, down from 34 billion rand almost last year to just shy of 18 billion rand. That's almost a 50% decrease. Clearly, something has changed within the power utility, within the generation side of it, within the energy availability factor, and more importantly, the reliance on diesel has decreased. Take us through some of the operational highlights there.
Yeah, basically just through Becky Nomolo and Dan and the team, and supported by the board, the whole generation recovery. Bottom line is this, that you know, last year, you know, having those temporary stacks, we brought back those three units of Kusile. Then we've also put into commercial operation unit 5. Now, as you know, as of yesterday, we completed unit 6. On the back of that, we see much more reliability from the rest of the fleet. This then gives you options of running your cheaper available units. And more importantly, we were only running the diesel substantially as intended during peak hours and not as baseload, resulting in that movement of literally a 50% reduction, which goes straight to your bottom line as reflected in the numbers, Jimmy.
When we caught up in December, we had forecast that municipalities by the end of the financial year we are looking at would potentially owe Eskom around 110 billion rand. At the time in December, or it was November, I think, the November reading was around 95.4 billion rands or so there. How much do municipalities owe Eskom today?
So, you know, at the end of March, it was 96 billion rand. Currently, now, as we sit here at the end of September, it's gone up about another 7 billion. We're sitting at 103 billion rand, of which Metros owes us about 11.5 billion. Clearly unsustainable, Jimmy. Year on year, our arrears have increased from 75 to this 96 billion, 20 billion. Is an unsustainable number, and we need to find a solution or in conjunction with government to arrest this decline in money owed to Eskom.
Caleb, some of the other things I want to take a look at from a numbers perspective, I wonder if we can take a look at the financial statements. I noted that from, at least in according to the audit report, the independent audit report, that there were 5 out of 7 reportable irregularities that were still open and being investigated by Eskom. What's happening here? The last time you and I spoke about material misstatements and reportable irregularities, we had quite a number of those in the previous financial year. We seem to have less, but we still have quite a few. What's going on here?
Yeah, so I think two of those relate to environmental, the one in terms of the air quality emissions and water usage. You know, we are working on that, and then with the better performance, we should see those amounts in terms of the requirements being reduced, but it's not going to be fixed overnight. It requires investment and it requires time. But we are taking it seriously from a board and an ESCO perspective. Then, Jimmy, you're correct. You know, if I bundle them into the whole issue around the PFMA issue, submitting financials, remember what PFMA requires is our year end is March. They require us to submit effectively financials that are complete and accurate by the end of May. And an organization as complex and as big as Eskom, it's almost impossible to have a complete set of financials that are free of any audit adjustments. And that's where we have that finding. However, we've implemented an audit recovery strategy similar to the generation one. It's a 3-year one. We've closed out 90% of audit findings. Obviously, the auditors need to confirm that. But we're looking, you know, finishing the audit now at the end of September, not where we'd like to be, but better than 19th of December. It allows us to be much more ready for the upcoming audit, and we're hoping to address some of those other reportable irregularities.
Caleb, I noted that for the first time in the last, I think, 3 or 4 financial years, when I'm looking at the financial statements, that Eskom sold loans just north of 7 billion rand, just I think 7.7 odd billion rand there. Can you take us through perhaps that transaction and the rationale behind that?
Yeah, so that one relates to the sale of our Eskom finance company. You know, it was part of the debt relief conditions as a non-core asset. We're busy in the final stages of that in terms of that asset held for sale. With African Bank, it's at the Competition Commission. I think it's clear there. Now we're at the Prudential Authority for final approval. So that's the transaction that relates to assets held for sale.
One final number that I want to look at before I let you go, Caleb, is the employee costs, currently sitting at around 43.2 billion rand, but increasing by 8.1 billion rand over the last financial year. We know that in the past, the entities like Eskom and other entities have had the issues surrounding things around ghost employees and salary disputes and all sorts of things around that. 8.1 billion rand seems like quite a big increase, but at the same time, Eskom is a large organization. Can you take us through that number?
Yes, you know, we got some 42,000 staff, but so two key drivers to that. One is your annual salary adjustments. We've had the three-year wage agreement with labor at 7%, and we offered a similar one for managerial staff, having not had increases for a number of years. And for the first time in 8 years, with the turnaround, the board and the minister had supported incentives in terms of short-term incentives for staff. That comes through at 3.7 billion. And from a generation side, we've got what we call a production bonus of 800 million. So if I look at the incentives, yeah, 3.7 plus 800 million, 4.5 billion, plus the salaries, which includes a growth of 3.5%, and of another 2.5 billion. That basically takes that up to 7 billion and another billion for other components. Important here, Jimmy, this is self-funded. None of the incentives and bonuses are part of tariff applications, whether it's in the normal application or a recovery through this regulatory clearing account. And none of the debt relief we receive from government can be used to fund operating costs, including bonuses. It's not allowed in terms of the conditions because it's meant to only repay interest and capital. Thanks.
First profits in 8 years for our power utility, and we are happy to celebrate that win as we continue to turn around that business. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the Chief Financial Officer at Eskom, Caleb Kassam, for taking us through the numbers and giving us a sense of the performance of our state-owned entity over the last financial year.
We can stay here, stick with what worked before, keep our eye on that one spot, steadfast. Or we can recognize that the only constant is change. At 91, we believe that with change comes opportunity. That's why we have 250 investment professionals in the world's investment hubs actively seeking opportunities for you, wherever in the world they may be. Isn't it time to change how you see investing? Invest offshore with 91. 91. Investing for a world of change. 91 is an authorized FSP.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
If it's on your mind, it's on ours. Partner with a wealth banker who connects goals to actions. Partner with NetBank Private Wealth.
$3,850 a fine ounce is where the gold price was trading at some point throughout today. If you had asked me a couple of years ago when we were at $1,650 whether we'd see this price in such a short amount of time, I probably would have said no. But nevertheless, we are here and it means a lot for the markets, especially as we look at the risk sentiment that sits in the market at the moment. We're going to be taking a look at this with the Senior Business Development Consultant at Nedbank Private Wealth, Lunga Nkonki. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of it. Lunga, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. It seems as though for the longest time we had forgotten the power of gold. For the longest time we had just let the sleeping dog lie, so to speak, and finally we're starting to see what the potential is in this market. What do you make of this recent rally?
Fantastic. Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for the opportunity to share with yourself and your listeners. It's incredible, I must be honest. You speak of it being a sleeping dog over the last few years. I think for myself and for us as investment managers, we haven't spoken, you know, more about any other asset in the last 3 years than gold, which has been rather unusual when you think of the environment we're operating in, because people normally think of gold when markets are a bit depressed, inflation numbers are high, interest rates are low. But we're seeing an environment where, you know, even the most balanced of funds are giving inflation plus 6%, sometimes 8%. You know, the yield on the U.S. Treasury, the 10-year, you know, I mean, interest rates in the U.S. are currently 4%, and markets have been quite rewarding to investors. But, you know, the investor psyche of chasing the recent bull, and it's been incredible to think of what gold has done over the last year. Just to throw a number at you, I think year-to-date it's done 46%, and the one-year number is quite similar as well around that level. And, you know, when you think about a year ago, when we were trading around 2,400, I would also never have guessed we'd be at $3,850 today. And there's talk of us breaching $4,000 by the end of the year. So it's one to watch and it's one to look at with a different lens. As I said, the operating environment has shifted significantly. Geopolitics are playing a huge part. You know, there's threats to the independence of something like the Fed, for example. So all this nervousness just creates doubt within investors and then brings gold back into the conversation for a hedge against all the risk.
Lunga, where does it stop? Because if I remember correctly, in the pandemic, we didn't breach $2,000 of fine ounce and stay above it. I think August of 2020, we stuck up just around $2,075 of fine ounce there, but we couldn't sustain the 2,000 mark. It almost became a psychological ceiling. And then we always said, if we break above 2,000, that's going to be it. And then gold is going to retrace. And if I'm looking at a chart, if I'm honest, ever since we broke above the $2,000 level, there's been no retracement. So at what point does this continue to run hot? Because now we're talking about things like $5,000 of fine ounce.
Correct. It's quite interesting. And then your reference point of COVID being a very topical one. What we've seen also post-COVID is things like, you know, Russia invading Ukraine, for example. And we've seen, you know, the gold conversation pop its head up there again, because when sanctions are imposed on a country for things like that, then they start buying other things for their reserves, like gold, for example. And what we've seen in the last 3 years is lots of sort of the BRICS nation reserves being poured into an asset like gold over the last 3 years. So that's been a big driver of price as well. And then we've also seen all the geopolitical risks, things like wars, pandemics. We're having more conversation with our clients about geopolitics than we do anything else. And people like the independence of something like a gold with the environment that we're operating in currently. You know, there's talks of, you know, Taiwan potentially being invaded by China. All these things just create negative sentiment in the market. So to answer your question, where does it stop? Who knows? Because if all these things remain at play, it will still remain the asset class that people will flock to. And this is not just individual investors. It's not just large institutional asset managers. It's the Federal Reserves as well, especially in those BRICS nations that I spoke to earlier. So it's one to watch very closely, but it's something that investors need to keep at the back of their minds, that this is to be thought of no longer in a traditional sense as a safe haven asset. It can be looked at in the same sense as any other growth stock in this environment, because to your question, you know, where does it stop? We've seen the investor returns that are coming from these large gold mining companies on the back of that gold price. So I think as the environment remains a bit uncertain, we will see a continuation of the surge in price over time. So it's one to watch very closely, Jimmy.
I think a part of that uncertainty we can all thank President Donald J. Trump for, because his conversations and his stance on the dollar have really contributed towards the movement of the gold price. Lunga, before I let you go, those that have missed the run, those that have missed the 11.5% that we've done this month alone on the gold price, that are wondering, is it too late to get in? Perhaps we can sort of nibble a little bit at the market, getting some form of exposure, even if it's a little bit of exposure. Is it still the play at the moment for people to just get, even if it's a little bit of exposure into the market while it's running?
I think in an overall investment strategy, looking at asset allocation, you don't want to be naked gold completely, even at these high levels. I mean, we were speaking to clients at 3,100, 3,200 about it being toppish. And, you know, it's just continued to climb as it has done, like you say, just this month alone, 11.5% growth. So I don't think clients necessarily should be naked the exposure, but it's one that should be very moderately weighted, because any precious metal, you can think of silver and platinum being the same as well. Those peaks and troughs that are experienced can be quite aggressive. And these things don't move in the same manner that a stock like a bank share would move, for example. You can't forecast its returns. So it can be a bit unpredictable, a bit risky. So you do want to be moderately weighted towards it, but you don't want to be nakedly exposed even at this topish level. So I think it could be prudent to take up some exposure into it. And there's many ways in which investors can do that. There's the traditional gold miners. You know, we know the big names in the top 40. Interestingly enough, some of these gold miners constituted, I think, only 11% in the top 40 last year. Now that number is closer to 18%, and that's due to the surge in price that we've seen, and they've benefited from that. You know, the market caps of these companies have grown significantly. So even at these levels, I would have some gold exposure in my portfolio, but you do need to be cognizant of your weighting and rather be on the side of moderate as opposed to too aggressively into the underlying.
Err on the side of caution when we are in uncharted territory. Doesn't mean you shouldn't get involved. It just means you should have a conversation with your financial advisor and think about it very carefully. We'll leave this conversation on that note, though. Thanks so much to Lunga for those insights and for the time. Lunga Nkonki, Senior Business Development Consultant at Nedbank Private Wealth, joining us to take a look at the gold price and what we make of it at these levels.
If it's on your mind, it's on ours. Partner with a wealth banker who connects goals to actions. Partner with NetBank Private Wealth.
I really had no concept of risk back then. I took on every investment and stock trading opportunity that came my way. And now
I can afford that second home in the UK and finally start giving back. If it's on your mind, it's on ours. Partner with a wealth banker that connects goals to actions. See money differently. Nedbank Private Wealth. We're a licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The latest data suggests that the backlog at the Department of Transport, where it relates to driver's licenses, currently sits just north of 300,000 driver's license applications that have yet to be finalized. This means that as South Africans, we face a unique set of challenges. If you happen to have an expired license on you, that could cause some issues if you happen to be flying domestically with your license, if you happen to be pulled over at a roadblock. And we're going to take a look at this and see what we make of it with the Department of Transport. I'm joined on the line by the department's spokesperson, Colin Msibi, to see what we make of these developments and how we can move forward. Colin, thanks so much for taking the time. Lovely to have you on the show. Now, while the backlog isn't ideal, we all know that it is a challenge that the department has been working through for quite a number of months at this point, if not a number of years. Can you give us an update, perhaps? Let's start there with what the department has been doing around the backlog and what measures you've been putting in place to deal with it.
Well, thanks so much for the opportunity. I must say that there's quite a huge amount of work which has been done by the DLCA, which is the agency that prints the licenses. So just an update, up to so far, the backlog is sitting at around 330,000 license cards that are ready to be printed. But since the 8th of May up until around about the 15th of September, we had already printed about 1.3 million license cards. So which basically does mean that there's been a lot of work done to reduce the backlog. Remember, we come from 733,000 backlog in terms of the license cards that needed to be printed. And the reason why the goalpost keeps on changing is because there are applications that come on the daily basis. We're looking at just north of 10,000 a day applications for cards that come to the DLCA. So hence, we're still battling to get to finality in terms of completing the backlog. So we're hoping by December we should be done with the backlog.
Colin, are we still dealing with one license printing machine in South Africa? And if that is the case, is there a reason why we haven't made alternative measures or alternative arrangements in this regard? I know it's been quite a topical conversation in the past, but perhaps you can give us a bit more clarity around that.
Well, indeed, it's still the same one machine that you're referring to. There was a process started where we went to cabinet to ask to get new printing machines as well as the new smart driver's license card. So that process started, I think it was in August 2022. We went on tender, I think it was in November 2022, and then we couldn't find a suitable service provider, and then we went back in April 2023. So that process led to where we are. Where we are now is that there was an appointment made of a service provider to procure the machines, but the problem was that there were findings, but also just whistleblowing around that, some of the irregularities that happened around the issue of procurement. So we've had to go to court to get a declaratory order because we had already, the DLC had already appointed the service provider to ask for the court to give us the way forward in terms of how we deal with that, because we believe we cannot, the PFMA doesn't allow us to continue with the process knowing full well that there is a problem with it. So that's where we are in terms of procuring new machines so that we can move away from this one machine that we have. The issue is before court. We filed the papers. So our lawyers are going to be addressing the court on the matter. If the court, for instance, does say, look, we've got to start afresh the process, we'll have to do so. If it says proceed, then there is a service provider which has been appointed.
Now, Colin, this backlog has some serious implications on consumers and South Africans in general when it comes to licenses that have expired. And perhaps you can expand on this and give us some clarity around what it then means if someone has an expired license. I understand that there was a recent Gazette notice that went out just this week that clarifies the rules and what happens to licenses once they've expired. Can you give us some clarity around that so that individuals out there that have got expired licenses that are waiting for their licenses know what their rights are and what protections they have?
Yes, the issue is that if you have applied for your new license card before your current one expires. In other words, the current card that you have is valid for 3 months. So even if it expires in 2 weeks' time, it would still be valid for 3 months. But once it expires in 3 months' time, it simply means you're going to have to get a temporary driver's license. So basically, that's the point that we're making, is that go and apply for a temporary license. So which simply means, one, there is a decision made by the minister and the MECs on the 27th of June that says if you go and apply for a temporary license, you don't have to pay for it. So in other words, you are getting it for free. So there is no excuse in saying, why do I have to pay when it's not my fault? So I think it may be just the issue of time that you have to spend the time and go and get a license. So basically, that's a dispensation we have currently, is that it's valid for 3 months. And then if it expires, and then you go and apply for a temporary license. But those who applied after your license, current license card has expired, you have no choice. But when you go to a testing center, you've got to apply for a temporary license. So in other words, when you put an application for your new card, but you must also do a temporary license as well. You don't have to pay for the temporary license.
Colin, does this dispensation extend indefinitely? So a hypothetical scenario, the backlog isn't cleared by December. My license expires in January, for example, and I still meet the requirements of applying before it expires. Would I still qualify for that three-month period to get that temporary license through?
Until such time that the minister and the MECs, take a different decision, contrary to what I've just explained, it would still be valid to do so.
Mm.
So we will communicate if there's any changes. We'll certainly communicate to the nation.
Mm. Colin, and then one last one. If I'm traveling with my driver's license and I happen to be flying from Johannesburg to Cape Town, as an example, and I hand my license over to the airline and the airline questions the validity or the expiry of the license, what do I do in that situation?
What I didn't mention when I was explaining is that you need to have proof, especially where you do not have a temporary license. So if for instance, you applied before your driver's license card expires, you must keep your proof that you've applied for a new license card. So it is that is why we're saying that the traffic officers, they cannot penalize you. But also when you get to a rental company, you've got to produce that proof to say you've applied for your license card. So they would have to use that as the paper to prove that the person has indeed applied, but there is this backlog, which everybody knows in the country. I mean, we've been communicating this message, but it always helps. Hence, we keep on emphasizing that go and get a temporary license because, I mean, it is for free. So that you save yourself from all the trouble of having to explain that this is a slip which proves that I've applied for the new license card.
The Department of Transport has gazetted measures to ensure that you are still able to utilize your licenses in accordance with the law in South Africa, provided you meet the legal requirements. So folks, if you are out there needing to renew your license, do so well within time to avoid any complications. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Colin for those insights and for the time. Colin Msibi, spokesperson for the Department of Transport, joining us to take a look at what South Africans do in the event of an expired driver's license.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This segment is brought to you by Alan Gray. More than 50 years of long-term investing, Alan Gray is an authorized financial services provider. Earlier, we took a look at the gold price movements and the fact that the gold price is almost at $4,000 a fine ounce. We're going to be taking a look at what the investment strategy looks like at this point and what having a well-diversified portfolio can do for you in times where safe havens are all but the flavor of the markets at the moment. I'm joined on the line by the institutional client manager at Alan Gray, Horatia Naidu McCarthy, to take a look at this and see what you make of it. Horatia, lovely having you on the show again. Always great to have a conversation with you. Let's start our conversation actually with the importance of diversification in a time where markets are uncertain, markets are in uncharted territory. And by uncharted, I mean the gold price, for example, is at all-time highs. Equity markets are at all-time highs. Nobody really knows how much longer this upward movement is going to last. How do you position a portfolio to work through ups and downs, and what is the value of diversification there?
So, I mean, it's a great question, and you've actually asked a lot of different questions packaged into one, and we could probably talk about it all evening, but since I just have you for just a few minutes, I think it's important to take a step back. And if you take a step back, you say to yourself, pre-pandemic, gold was sitting at about $1,600 per ounce. And as you've just said, it's now approaching $4,000 per ounce. And you've discussed earlier in your show, you know, the drivers behind this surge in gold price. And why has it surged in the way it has? It's because investors are looking for safe haven assets. And, you know, if we just unpack what is a safe haven asset, something that can hold or increase its value when markets are noisy, when, you know, it looks very unstable, and you said it's very uncharted territory that we're finding ourselves in. And I think the difficult job that we have here at Alan Gray is that we have to position our portfolios in a way that ensures they are future fit. They are able to perform in multiple scenarios because we don't have the crystal ball. It's impossible to tell what the future holds. There's a lot of noise, a lot of things that is beyond our control, and it's important to cut through that noise. So yes, having gold in the portfolio, and I'm talking about both the physical gold and the gold miners, is an important part of the portfolio. But it's very important for us to, if I use the Alan Gray Balanced Fund as an example, to look at other asset classes and say we've got some really nice defensive equity holdings with, you know, decent dividend yields. We have some cash in the portfolio to take advantage of opportunities as we see big market moves. We see other fixed income opportunities in the portfolio, and really we need to mitigate for risk. So for us, I think it's very important to say yes, we are leaning into names, you know, that are benefiting from perhaps the gold rally, but it also is very important that should things change, the portfolios are protected, and we protect our client capital on the downside.
Horatia, I can't help but wonder whether or not this reset is what we're going through, and I use the word reset because I saw a recent conversation from the Alan Gray team referring to what we're going through at the moment from a gold perspective as rebuilding somewhat of the global monetary order, but using bricks of gold. A very good analogy from that perspective, but could be quite literal, because if history is anything to go by, in times of uncertainty, in times where safe havens become popular, we have seen in the past that gold stands out and then leads the reset. Is that what we're seeing here?
I definitely believe that we're on the precipice of somewhat of a regime shift. And I'll tell you why. If we go back in history and look at when gold has traditionally outperformed, it's when US 10-year yields are weak and when markets are weak. And, you know, post-Liberation Day, we saw US, you know, treasuries recover. And as you said, markets are at record highs. So why in the world are we seeing this rally in the gold price? And I think it comes down to, and you may have discussed this earlier, you know, behind what the surge is down to. We talk about the the buying that's coming through from central banks. And central banks are very much price insensitive buyers. They don't care how much the gold price is, but they want the aspects of gold that they can't really get from US treasuries because, you know, the last few years, US treasuries really haven't been the right place to be. They've been pretty low yield. They also have not been a great protector of inflation, you know, against inflation. And so you have to look at something like purchasing power. But I think a very, very big theme that comes through is central banks buying gold because of increased geopolitical uncertainty. It's not going to go away anytime soon. We saw when Russia invaded the Ukraine in 2022, a lot of central banks, particularly in emerging markets, sat up and said, hold on, they've been locked out of the SWIFT monetary system, which means US Treasuries is not as politically agnostic as you would like them to be. And so they're increasingly looking to other avenues. And gold is something, you know, that has been a store of value over time. And we're seeing a shift as there seems to be a theme of deglobalization emerging. And you can feel it. You know, countries are becoming very self-reliant, and that self-reliance has meant that central banks are increasingly adding to their stores and they're adding to gold. Another interesting thing that I picked up recently is if you look at the last 15 years, you look at the S&P 500, and every time the S&P 500 has had a correction of at least 15%, US dollar as a widely regarded safe haven asset has gone in the other direction and acted as a shock absorber or safe haven, and that's what you expect from it. Whereas since Liberation Day, you know, the dollar's remained weak, and year to date, the dollar's down 10%. So, you know, your widely regarded safe haven assets in US treasuries and US dollars, the US dollar is coming into question. And so investors are increasingly looking for other avenues, and that avenue is gold.
As the world shifts, it is important to have the right team behind you to help you adjust and understand the shift. If you have any questions, please reach out to the team at Alan Gray. They're more than happy to assist. But for now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the institutional client manager at Alan Gray, Horatio Naidu McCarthy, for joining us. Take a look at the conversation around safe havens and the value case that exists for it. The segment was brought to you by Alan Gray. More than 50 years of long-term investing. Alan Gray is an authorized financial services provider. With over 5 decades of investing experience, Alan Gray remains focused on building long-term wealth for clients by pursuing long-term returns without taking undue risk. Alan Gray, more than 50 years of long-term investing. Alan Gray is an authorized financial services provider.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's Property Tuesday time, and folks out there, if you happen to have 275 million rand lying around, boy, do I have a deal for you. There is a wine estate in the beautiful province of the Western Cape, obviously, known as the Bloemendal Wine Estate, that is going up for auction. There is a reserve price, there is an opening bid, and you're going to need a lot of millions. We're going to take a look at this. I'm joined on the line by the director and franchisee at Rawson Auctions National. That's a division of the Rawson Properties Group, Tanya Jovanovsky, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Tanya, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Who do I make the check out to for the reserve amount?
Well, you can make that out to the transferring attorneys who are doing this. I'd love to say directly to me, but the highest bidder would be making the payment to the nominated attorneys of the seller, which are the Bloemendal Group's attorneys.
Now, the check might not go through, but I'll still write it out anyway. Tanya, how did we get to a reserve price of 270 million rand on a wine estate?
Yeah, well, that's actually a really good question because we like to take on mandates where we can justify the price. And this is a world-renowned estate. You know, it goes back to 1702 where it was originally used as they used to make fresh produce there and supply the Dutch East Company's ships. And then it was officially registered as an estate in 1987. But as we sit right now, we're auctioning off 240 hectares of stunning property. So basically a hectare in that area, just to give you an indication, goes for around $1 million or more. So you've got the 240 hectares. You've also, the sale includes some stunning restaurants which are on the state, very well-known 360-degree restaurant. It's also got the Bonhomis restaurant, a manor house, a minor house. There's wine tasting there, and it has got so many awards for the most beautiful wines that they produce. They produce about 130,000 bottles of wine a year. So, yeah, so certainly getting good value for money, and there's also a proposed development long-term if the owners wish to diversify a little bit. So it's certainly a trophy property to acquire.
That sounds like the dream property for any investor. Tanya, take me through perhaps some of the history behind the property. You touched on the fact that it dates back to 1702. It has been around for quite some time. How does that factor into things like the valuation, things like what the property is able to produce? Take us through perhaps just how some of these factors are built into the valuation of an estate like this.
Okay, well, if we have a look at the fact that this current estate consists of two sections, one is 181 hectares and the other is 57. It's currently zoned agriculture because obviously it's producing the wines. The sections that have been used for restaurants are zoned accordingly, but together, whoever buys it is buying 240 hectares. And currently, if you had to buy 1 hectare in the Durbanville area, it would cost you $1 million. So here you've already got 240 in as a minimum price just for the land value. And, you know, it's so well established. As we said, it goes back to 1702. It's right in the middle of Durbanville Hills, right in between all those other beautiful wine estates. I believe that tourism is rife. We're expecting a chock-a-block season with tourists coming into South Africa this year. And, of course, one of the things on everybody's to-do list, or most people's, is to visit a well-known wine estate. And this is certainly one to visit, you know, because there's so many diverse things you can do there. There's a lovely restaurant for kids. There's a little play area. They can host parties. There's also the main restaurant at the top, which is a more formal restaurant that has a conference facility as well. And then if you just want to go and pop along and taste some of their wonderful wines, you know, you're welcome. The clients are welcome to do that as well. So the person buying it has the asset of the land, the fact that they established wines, the fact that the brand is extremely well known. They make a beautiful Chenin Blanc Chardonnay. They've won so many awards and accolades. The winemakers there. So anybody who's interested, obviously, in buying this farm beforehand would come along, meet the winemaker. We take them on a tour of the estate, introduce them to some of the directors. And yeah, so they're getting a huge amount for what they're investing in. We've already had a huge amount of interest. So we're very excited and feel very privileged to be auctioning such a trophy property as the Bloemendal Wine Estate.
Tanya, before I let you go, why an auction and not an outright sale? Does it make a difference for properties of this, or for estates of this size, or is it down to the seller's choice at this point?
I think the nice thing about an auction is the fact that you've got a large, we do obviously have the reserve price at 270, we're opening at 250, we've already had a lot of interest, and then people register to bid, so you've got competitive bidding, which at the end of the day gives a fair price to both buyer and seller, because the property will achieve the price that it deserves. So we're very confident that we're going to get a very high price for the property. And I'm working together with Jacques, who's the local franchisee for Rawson in the area. He's valued the property as well. And, you know, there's also potential later on if somebody wishes to do a development there, or alternatively keep it as a wine estate. But auctions, there's a fixed price. The public knows it's going to be sold if we achieve our reserve. And we've got competitive bidding, so that makes it really exciting. All the bidders obviously have to register before the day. We get all their FICA documents. They've got to provide proof that they do have the funds.
Well, folks, if you have around 300 million rands lying around and you are looking for a wine estate, be sure to attend the auction that takes place in the middle of October. We're going to leave that conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Tanya Jovanovski for those insights and for the time. That was a Tanya around the Bloemendal Wine Estate that's set for auction. It's just gone 7 o'clock. Greg Hoss is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. From my side, good night.